It's a fly love song. To the effect of nothing, effective fronting is what I don't allow, so let me tell you something. I am a bona fide. Not too modest and not a lot of pride. Soon to have a ride and a home to reside. If my mama is sick, I'm by her bedside. Used to watch the show on Channel 4 called Riptide. Watch my wares inside, cause it's too damn cold outside. That's how the runnings go. If there ain't no dough, then there ain't no show. So take your roly-poly fat promoter to the chemical bank and get my cash. If you wanna see the people scream and laugh, your best question ask real fast. Cause I don't wanna see them start bucking, throwing chairs in the air while you be ducking. What? Don't step to me with that. If you promoting the show, make sure it ain't whack or else I'm leaving.
Let me tell you.
I'm leaving.
Let me tell you.
I'm leaving.
Let me tell you.
The whack show.
Yo, man, what's up with that?
Movie skill number 108. Better have my donuts over here. Bad News Ramen. Since better have my donuts sucks on the mic. He has to go like, oh, you have to carry me. I'm not feeling good.
I didn't see you have to carry me.
I carry you all the time. What are you talking about, dude?
Is that a fact?
Yeah, that's a fact. All right, so let's jump into it, dude. You've been calling for this thing for the past like 2 years, and it finally came up. So you got your King of the Ring. What do you think about it, dude? Here we go with the coffin. I smell a rat.
It was all right. I haven't watched the final yet. I know what happens. I watched all the matches on Raw and the semis on the network. I just didn't get around to watching the final. I'm glad Barrett won. I definitely didn't think he was going to win. I've been tweeted out a few days, like, they're doing everything possible to make this guy who should be a main event level competitor be a straight jobber. Like, really, really bad to have him lose, I thought, on the pre-show for the pay-per-view. When he comes back and he wins the thing, it looked like a setup, like, just like a vehicle for them to try to, like, prop up Neville. Like, that was what I thought the tournament was going to be, and it was that, but, I mean, the right guy won it, I think, in the end, so I'm happy. I don't like that it's over 2 days. I think it's much better when they have to go through, like, 3 matches to win the thing in one night, but I don't mind them if they want to do, like once a year or so, like, King of the Ring as, like, straight network exclusive or something. I think that would be good, but... I think the whole thing should have been in one show.
Did your network run out?
Yeah, I renewed it though.
When did you renew it?
Sunday.
I see.
I got the email Sunday that said it was going to run out on Monday, so I renewed it.
Okay.
So, why did you try to get in? And
not me. No. Everything's on the up and up over here, dude.
Okay.
I ran into some technical difficulties with it, but you know,
it
was my login, dude. My login was faulty.
Try. Yeah, so, should be good. Yeah, I watched, the semifinals yesterday through my network account, so I know that my network login worked as of yesterday.
That's good, man.
Okay, so,
I'm glad yours
like worked. Just saying.
If your login works, then my probably will too.
I would think that would be likely.
Yeah.
So,
like, everything comes together.
Yeah, it's nice. Yeah, and I don't even mind an expanded format where maybe, because I feel like they felt like they had to tie it into Raw somehow. So maybe instead of just like the eight guys in the tournament, maybe next time you do a couple qualifiers on Raw just to make Raw have a tie-in. And then you do, like, a Tuesday, like, an exclusive, like, one, you know, two-hour show that's all King of the Ring. Not as a pay-per-view, but as a network exclusive. I think that's good.
So is Neville, is he just a segue for Finn Balor? I mean, you know, I mean, like, I don't know. I don't know if I dislike the guy just because I just like him or...
Yeah, he's not bad, man.
He's not bad, but...
He, you know, he can put on some decent matches. The thing that I like about him is even though he is a high flyer and he does, you know, that's basically what his moveset is, I don't see him as, like, this kind of luchador kind of guy where, like, all of his moves are things that I can't believe that he's pulling off, right? He doesn't have these things where the other guy has to do A little bit with the
Hurricane Ranas and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It's not all these Hurricane Ranas, and then.
Well, he does do a Hurricane Rana, which I think is kind of staged, but it's a Hurricane Rana.
Yeah.
Hurricane Ranas are staged anyway, so.
Yeah, it's legit enough. It doesn't look terrible. They did a little bit with was it Sheamus that he fought in the first round? Who did he fight in the first round?
I have no idea.
Well, there was somebody that was bigger than him, and they did a spot where the guy like ran into the ring. I think it was
Sheamus.
No, that was the second round, because that was on the network. Okay. But like it even could have been Sheamus, but he got him with like a back suplex, which he basically had no lift on. It was just like the guy, he sidestepped when he ran into the rope, and then like when he rebounded, Neville got behind him, and then
yeah,
so he didn't really have to lift him. So that was a little bit assisted, but for the most part, like his moveset is stuff that I can believe. I think his finisher is really good, but I think you phrased it best. Whether I'm not sure it was the last Muda scale or the one before on the little preview notes. The man that Charisma forgot is kind of what to me is going to be his downfall. But what you brought in, I don't know why they would want to use him as a segue to Finn Balor, but I was talking about that today. Was like, there's no reason for him to be there when Finn Balor's clearly superior to him and Itomi is too. And as much as, like, you want to say, like, there's a language issue with Itomi, it's not like Neville's cutting a good promo.
Well, he just said King Booger. I around that a couple times. That was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah.
King Booger. But, I don't know. I mean, the tournament really felt, like, thrown together at the last minute. I appreciate what they're trying to do, but yeah, I do think they need some, you know, some prelim matches, and just like the whole thing, like all kind of the canned interviews about what they would do as king and stuff. It's just dumb. I mean, and especially like the other kind of topic I want to get to as well is like, is Dean Ambrose, I mean, is he overrated on the mic? I mean, I remember in the beginning, you know, we were really high on him in terms of his mic work, but ever since he became a single, it kind of seems like his mic work isn't there. Is he locked into a kind of a character, and that's why he's not kind of shining on the mic like I think he should? Because it's just pretty much everything he says is just kind of nonsense to me.
I like him on the mic. I think he's doing a pretty good job with what he can. The thing was, like the best actual like feud that he had was Seth Rollins, and that was only thrown together because Roman got hurt, and then that's what gave Dean this good, pretty good babyface run that he's been on. But what I think is, after that program ended, there's been no direction for Dean Ambrose. It's just been like fighting guy after fighting guy, and no real reason. And so I think that he's stuck in that. I think his promo is stuck in that rut of, like, he's just going to kind of be this kind of loose cannon, you know, no offense to Brian Pillman, but this loose cannon kind of character until they put him in some kind of program with somebody where he can kind of focus, like, his promos towards, like, some kind of objective or goal. So, I mean, I think he's still really good on the mic. I really do like his character, but they're not doing anything with him. And that's the issue where he's kind of getting stagnant, in that you want him to do well, and I think you like watching his matches, but then like it's just like random match strung together. There's no direction in it.
Well, when you had those three guys together, Shield with Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, and Dean Ambrose, to me was a guy that was most akin to really take off as a singles guy. And it's just kind of funny that the guy that we thought was, you know, kind of weakest on the mic in terms of charisma with Seth Rollins, and Rollins has really taken off on his mic work. And then, of course, you know, he's done the work in the ring as well, and I think that really lends itself together. I just kind of don't get, you know, you have a work like Dean Ambrose, and he really isn't going anywhere, and you try putting him in a feud with Harper, which on paper sounds like a good feud, but it's just something's just like missing there with both those guys. And both those guys are really good mechanics in the ring. And it's just, I just don't know why these two guys aren't taking off or whatever it is. I mean, I think if you have like a Harper and Ambrose match, they fought each other, right? And was that a good match?
I thought it was a really I thought it was a really good idea and one of the few original ideas that they've had. So they were, like, I don't know, whatever it was, a street match. Chicago street match. So it starts off as your typical, like, you know, bringing out all the weapons and doing all that stuff. And then so they go out the arena, but then, like, they get lost from the cameras. And then they show him in the parking lot, and, like, Harper's trying to, like, get in the car and drive away from him. And then Ambrose jumps through the window, and then they drive off. And then, like, you don't know what happens. And then so they just keep the show going. Then, like, an hour later into the show, like, all of a sudden they come back and then they finish
up. What are they doing in the car for an hour? You know what I mean?
Blowing each other. They probably went and did some coke and picked up some hookers. I don't know. Like, I don't think they did anything.
I think that'd be longer than an hour. You know, if you have some good coke, you know, like Neil Patrick Harris and Harold and Kumar, I mean, that lasted all night, dude. You know?
Well, these guys are professionals.
Yeah.
They had to get back and finish the match. But then I just thought, like, the concept of it was good, right? So it leaves to your imagination, like, whatever crazy stuff they could have been doing. It would have been cool if they had, like, a camera following them and show them fighting in the park in Chicago or, like, different weird places. But for what it was, like, I thought it was kind of cool. It was unique, at least. It wasn't something I had seen. So, I mean, I thought the match was pretty good. Yeah, I think you're right. Like, sort of something is missing. And maybe it's possibly because just the way their personalities both are, they're both kind of out there. Maybe that's kind of how it's supposed to be. But I think I like watching the matches when they fight. I think the matches are really good.
Well, I mean, I think Harper being out there, I think that works for him. And I actually think that Harper's been good on the mic. I mean, I've enjoyed his mic work for what his character is because he fits that character. I don't think Dean really fits that character they're trying to put him in. I mean, I think he could be a lot more, you know, and I hate to say this, I think he'd be a lot more cerebral. You know, like, I think he can be one of these guys that is more calculating, kind of like a Jake the Snake Roberts type character. And I think they're just missing the ball on this guy by having him just kind of think crazy things.
Oh, well, I think that you're right. I mean, I think when they get to the point that they're ready to elevate him into, like, a main event role or, like, important storylines, I think that's the direction you have to go with him. But for this time, like, if he's going to be just in a series of, like, he beats Luke Harper, then he loses to Luke Harper, then he beats him, then he loses to him, then he fights the next guy and he beats him and loses and so on and so forth, like, you're not going to gain anything by having him be this cerebral, like, calculated person because he's just, like, a 500 wrestler. But once you get to the point where it's like, okay, now we're ready to elevate this guy, I think that's when you bring in the story element of, like, yeah, he is pretty smart and calculated, but it'd be a waste to do it now when he's in a feud that's going to go nowhere, I think.
So the other guy I think they're dropping the ball on, and I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on this because, you know, it's nice, it's refreshing that the world champion is Seth Rollins. There's some new guys in the mix. I mean, he's having a feud with Randy Orton. I don't have a problem with that. I think Randy Orton is the perfect guy to have a feud with, you know, when you're first defending your belt. And they probably had a great match.
It was a pretty good match.
Yeah. But, you know, I feel that you have all these, you know, and the part of the, when I saw King of the Ring and what they were doing, it's like, well, your mid-card guys right now, they're your money guys. I mean, all these mid-card guys are really, really good, and you don't really have these top echelon stars. I mean, you can make an argument that Seth Rollins is still a mid-card guy. I mean, you know, he's going into that higher, you know, to the higher status of a card, and I think he's doing well, but, you know, he in terms of getting his feet wet and stuff, he's still, you know, you have guys like, you know, Dolph Ziggler, Sheamus, Wade Barrett, who have been around for a long time, and they haven't moved up yet. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. What I'm worried about is that you have Daniel Bryan. And it's funny because we asked for Daniel Bryan to be the Intercontinental Champion. I know you had some objections to it. I do as well. And then you have John Cena with these two belts that are elevating these belts. But what I'm kind of worried about is, like, what happens when Rusev's program is over with John Cena? He's going to lose, what's-her-name? Where does he go from here? I mean because he's in this shtick of being a nationalist. And if you look at it, like, nationalists, for the most part, have never really taken off. You know, I mean, name a guy that's, like, from a country and says, you know, Russia's great or whatever it is and USA sucks. I mean, there hasn't really been, I mean, there's no longevity with that type of character. Now, do you still like Rusev in the ring? And don't answer that question yet. Is there something there? Yeah, you're chomping on the bit for that. So I'm surprised you didn't cough about it. But what happens to this guy after? I mean, you take away Lana. He's no longer involved with the main event feud in Cena. Do you think this guy's going to fall by the wayside, or do you see some future with this guy?
He's going to fall by the wayside because, like, that's what happens when John Cena gets done with the guy. Again, it's an opportunity to make.
I mean, how's this feud been? I mean, has it been
it's been pretty boring. I had a real problem with that match. That was a horrible match. That Four Corners match. So you want me to answer your question first?
You do what you want. You're the doctor, dude.
Okay. So really quickly, I kind of answered it already, I think. But yeah, he's gonna fall by the wayside, and I can easily predict that he'll start losing a bunch of matches. He'll do what they've typically done, what they did with like Brodus Clay, what they did with Big E. What they did with all these guys, they brought them in and built them up, had them start off on a strong streak, and then once they started losing, the losing never stopped. And then what seems to always be like the tried and true formula for WWE is like when they want to decide to try to do something else with him, they'll put him with some comedy gimmick tag partner, and they'll start dancing. That's my prediction for Rusev. Like it's pretty much exactly what they did with Vladimir Kozlov. Is that the right name?
It doesn't matter.
But you remember what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
So like that's exactly I think what's going to be with him. Now here's my problem. Okay, so that match was bad. Okay, I did like they had this element that they got these little like red light and green light in each corner that indicates who's tagged, right? But here was a thing that I didn't see anybody address online, and really pissed me off. So it has to be. So the stipulation was you have to touch four corners consecutively, right? So what you'd have throughout the match is like Rusev would touch a corner, and he'd touch a second corner, and then Cena would come in and tackle him. And as soon as Cena made contact, the lights went off, right? And vice versa, Cena touch a corner, he'd get three, and then Rusev would grab him right before he got to the last one, and then the lights would go off. When it came down to like the finish, basically both of them touched three corners, and they turned around and they faced each other off in the ring, and then Cena just put him in an AA, which is contact. So by the whole rest of the match, immediately all the lights should turn off, right? But he AAs him, no lights go off, and then he walks over and taps the fourth corner, and that's it. So like it was a horrible setup to the AA because like Rusev just walked right into it. But on top of that, the logic was like ridiculous. And that you don't even, the way that you've been refereeing this match the whole way through, now all of a sudden, just because you want to finish, you just disregard everything that had been done throughout the whole match. And I really was shocked that nobody brought that. I think it's hard to explain what happened in like 140 characters, but I mean, that was just asinine, like the way that they, like, it was like, am I not paying attention to what's going on? Did you not turn off the lights every other time contact was made? It was just terrible.
So this guy gets in a program, Cena, and pretty much, from what I'm seeing, is that pretty much gave Cena, some type of program where he gets some, he's still involved in the WWE universe in terms of wrestling and all that stuff. The whole kind of open U.S. challenge, thrown in there as well. This guy does all the work. I mean, I'm not saying that Rusev is doing all the work, but, people are trying to say that John Cena is becoming a really good worker, and the whole thing is that, yeah, Cena can work with guys that know how to work. I mean, Rusev is a different match entirely. And then the whole thing is that I kind of feel that Rusev hasn't really been able to develop because he's been fighting Cena this whole time.
Right. And it's very similar to Roman Reigns and Big Show, right? It's not like Big Show can't work, but like there's no growth in Roman Reigns. There's no movement in his character because he's stuck fighting the same guy week after week, pay-per-view after pay-per-view, and it's holding him back.
Now, do you like Rusev? I mean,
I do like Rusev, but I think it's pretty limited what you can do with the character that he has, right? I mean, what they do with him and Lana is probably, I mean, it's the only thing that they can figure out what to do with him, I think. But, I mean, that's tough because, like, there's a ceiling for a guy like Rusev, and especially if you're going to put him in a program against John Cena, you know, like, there's going to be very limited amount of times where he's going to be able to get over, and in the end, you know, he's going to lose. And, yeah, it just, I don't know, I just see, like, probably end up going down and fighting Ryback afterwards or something like that.
Well, you can't fight Ryback right now because they put him in a program with Bray Wyatt, you know, and that's kind of like the other thing, too, is it's just, you have, I mean, the difference between, I mean, you can kind of say that Bray and Rusev are very similar in terms of Rusev has a gimmick, Bray has a gimmick. Granted, Bray, I think, is the better performer on the mic within his character, and I believe he isn't, you know, he's good in the ring. You know, you can say that Bray has one type of match, or, you know, he can't carry a 20 or 30 minute match, but who is this guy faced? I mean, he hasn't faced anybody. I mean, I think the only guy that he's faced is a Dean Ambrose that can go, but it was a feud that really didn't do anything. You know, yeah. It wasn't like the payoff is really good.
Daniel, I mean, he had a good feud with Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
Missed opportunity feud with John Cena. And then the Dean Ambrose one, again, that was weird. I thought that feud would be a lot better than it ended up being.
And then he gets him
thrown together Undertaker feud, yeah. That, again, doesn't do anything for him. And so now, I mean, I think it's okay. The one thing I like about him now targeting Ryback is they've done some building of Ryback, so he's got, like, a little bit of momentum going. But this is, like, the one feud that I'm very sure that Wyatt's going to come out on top of, and he needs that. He needs to come out on top of some feud at some point, because pretty much ever since he's gone singles, like, he's gotten in some big feuds, and he's pretty much lost all of them except for the Dean one that didn't really go anywhere.
So who do you think is the kind of the top five wrestlers right now? Not in terms of the guys that you like, but, you know, the playing field's all kind of leveled. Who are like your top five guys that you think are going to make some waves within the next WrestleMania cycle?
It's just overall, right? You're not saying wrestler, just like, yeah. You know, in the ring, on the mic, all nine. Rollins, Reigns.
You put Reigns at number two?
I was just listening.
Or you're just listening.
I can rank after I go through my five if I need to. Man, that's really difficult because you're not asking me, like, necessarily the guys that I like, but who I think is going to be the guys that are, what, carrying this thing through the next year. I mean, I think those two definitely. I'd really like to say Dolph Ziggler. I think he's not going to be in the picture for, like, any, like, big title, but I think he's going to be the guy that's kind of carrying the shows, like, week in and week out like he does. I don't know if that counts.
Yeah, I mean, that counts. Yeah, Rollins, Reigns, Ziggler. And I think I'll throw one in there. I think Bray should be in the picture.
I think he should be. I don't know that. I think that he is, but I think he absolutely should be. The guy who, if I got to throw a wild card out there, would be Kevin Owens. I think if I don't think he needs a lot of seasoning, and I think that if he got the call to the main roster, he's the type of guy that can make an immediate impact. So since it's a full year out, I'll throw Owens as like a wild card.
That's a lot of wrestlers, Dean. You know, I mean, those are like wrestlers, you know, and that's like...
Owens can talk now.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Like, these are like some old school wrestler guys. I mean, and we're not even throwing in Samoa Joe, you know, who's supposed to show up in, you know, at least with WWE in June. So, I mean, the whole thing is like you have like, I think it's a case now where WWE is, they still have, you know, they're kind of... in a gray area where you're killing me, dude. Damn, man. You done? Yeah. I lost my train of thought. I can't work this way anymore, dude. You know.
I'm fired. Firing me?
No, I'm not firing you. You're fired. I'm firing you. I think they're in this gray area where you have like kind of like these big mega superstars and like John Cena and Daniel Bryan. But then you're also bringing in these guys that really know how to work. All of them are great mechanics in the ring, and the wrestling is speaking for themselves instead of the promo and the marketing machine. And that's really kind of where they have to make a decision pretty quick. You know, because I mean, the whole thing is, I think John Cena is just, you know, he's a roadblock with any momentum that's going on. And to a small part, I think Daniel Bryan is as well. And I think Daniel Bryan is kind of hurt, isn't he? So that's like kind of another thing too.
He might be done.
Might be done? Yeah. Well, I think Daniel Bryan's been done for a long time. You know, I mean, it's like a sheep mentality with these guys, right? Like you can say like, oh, you know, Daniel Bryan is a champion and everybody's fine, or oh, John Cena is a champion and, you know, and people are like, oh yeah, okay, sure, whatever. You know, I just feel these guys, and you can throw Kane in there, you can throw a Big Show, you can probably throw in Randy Orton. I think these guys that they're coming from, you know, 2008, 2009, when the business was different. And you have all these guys that know how to tell stories in the ring and can build a lot of momentum, but I think they're just getting held back. And I don't know if it's not like I have a problem with it. I mean, I think the show's entertaining, but I think it can be so much more.
Well, let's do it this way, because I mean, that was a really difficult question that you asked me, because really I should be saying like Randy Orton and John Cena, because the stories will always revolve around them. So why don't you name five guys that you think are getting held back or not being able to elevate because Cena's and
that's a good job right there, dude.
Thank you.
Yeah, way to I was almost like Robert Downey Jr. I was gonna leave the interview, dude. You know, you saw the interview, right?
I didn't, but I heard something about I heard about it.
Well, it was
a dumb question, right? And then
it's that Indian dude that I don't know if you saw that Quentin Tarantino one where. He was trying to, like, the guy was trying to say, like, well, you have an obligation to your fans to answer the question of whether movie violence translates into real life violence. And Tarantino was like, he's like, I'm shutting your butt down right now, dude. He's like, this is a commercial for my movie. He's all like, Jamie Foxx said, he's like, well, then you should ask Jamie Foxx. So it was just kind of that whole thing, like, Downey was talking. Here's the thing, like, Downey was answering the questions about the movie, asking the questions about Iron Man. The questions about Iron Man were just really, really kind of weak. And the whole thing was that Downey would give his interview. I mean, Downey would give his answer. And right when Downey's, like, finished with a sentence, this guy's, like, answering another question. So he's not even listening to, like, what Downey is saying. Because Downey was saying some pretty cool stuff. I mean, Downey was saying, like, hey, he's like, you know, like, Iron Man's this arm dealer. You know, and then he gets hurt by his own arms. And he has a piece of shrapnel in his heart. And he has to build something, you know, and he does a total like 180 and stuff like that, or 360. He's like, I think he's like the modern mythology hero and stuff. Mm-hmm. And instead of like delving into that, the guy asks another question. Mm-hmm. Doesn't even listen to him. And then Downey threw him a couple bones. He's like, you know what? He's like the first Iron Man. He's like, that's me. You know, like that's me. He's like, now, like it seems like, you know, like he's like, I can't say that anymore about Iron Man. Now I think there's the character that's developed. And instead of going like, well, yeah, well, tell me how he's changed and how have you changed?
Yeah.
I mean, it's an easy segue.
Yeah.
You know, you can answer that question. And I've been a reporter, and I've asked questions like that. And there's always, you know, you're doing an interview, you're doing a press junket, but you know, there's always like a, you know, like one kind of thing you want to ask, right? Mm-hmm. And that's like an easy way, like you said, well, you know, he's done a 180 or a 360 or whatever, you know, like, and now you think that his character's taken off. He's like, What is it? And the question you should ask is like, well, what is it? What has changed within you for you to say that, you know, you're no longer Tony Stark, or what, you know, Tony Stark has come on his own thing? Is there anything from your past or any revelation that you've had? You know, because we all know you've had problems in the past, you know, with drugs and alcohol and stuff. And like, how have you changed now? And what makes you a better person now? Because Tony Stark really kind of mirrors what Robert Downey did. I mean, it's very easy stuff to do, but you know, there's ways to ask that question, and Downey, and you know, and even if Downey says, "Hey, you know what?" He's like, "I don't want to talk about that." This, I'm like, okay, well, you know, you can always end it off with like an easy question, right?
Right.
Like what you just did, you know, and say, "Well, you know, well, what's your most favorite part? What's your most favorite aspect of Iron Man, or why do you think this movie, you know, Avengers 2?"
What did he ask him?
He started asking like whether he was, you know, whether he was a liberal. He took an interview from like 2000 whatever. where Downey was saying that, you know, he's no, you know, he had a liberal view and then he went to jail and stuff and this, that, and this. He's like, well, are you a liberal now or conservative or whatever? And Downey's like, and he just starts looking at his press agent. He's like, he's all, what are we, you know, what are we doing here? You know, and then, and you know, this guy shows up like, oh, well, you know, we want to ask different questions as well. It was just really bad. I mean, just really, really shoddy journalism. You know,
unprofessional.
I don't know if it'd be unprofessional. I mean, this guy basically, like, so when you're a journalist or when you're a reporter, you really get this high view of yourself. And this is what when I first started in journalism, like, you know, like you would have blogs and stuff, and you have like people online, and like you're like, oh, these guys, they're nothing because they haven't had the training. They're not as good as writers as we are. You know, like, you know, journalists are the best. Newspaper journalists are the best journalists in the world and stuff. And I started looking at these guys, reading these guys' stuff. I was like, you know, these guys are good writers. You know, like, you know, we gotta start, because they're hitting a certain niche of people. And I'm like, we gotta adjust to that, and we gotta start becoming like that too. But this guy, you know, is really, you know, so the whole thing is like, yeah, it's a press junket, but they're not gonna be a PR machine for the movie. It's like, well, that's what a press junket is. You know, like a press junket is to be a PR machine. Mm-hmm. Now you can ask some questions, right? But there's ways of delivering those questions. He just started, like, you know, starting like pointing to things that Downey said back like 8 years ago, 7 years ago, and Downey's like, yeah, that was like, that was 8 years ago, you know. And the great thing about, you know, the great thing about, you know, life is that, you know, that's what I felt at the time. He's like, this is the way I feel now. And he just kept on trying to push him about drugs and stuff and everything. And then finally, like, the PR agent for Downey's like, let's go. And he walked out. But to get back to your point, the five guys I think are getting held back the most. I think Bray is probably being held back the most out of everybody. I like where Dolph is right now. I wouldn't say that Dolph is getting held back. I mean, Dolph is finally getting a push without getting a push. Mm-hmm. You know, he's finally getting respected. You know, where he can win some, he can lose some. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it's not as outlandish as it was before. We lost every single match. You're sitting going like, what the heck is going on?
Right.
So I think Dolph is in a pretty good place. Yeah,
I agree.
I think Cesaro is getting held back. I think, you know, I think it's good to have a guy like Kidd with him, because it just shows how good Cesaro is. You know, everybody says, like, Cesaro can't relate to the fans, which is a big crock. I mean, Cesaro is always related to the fans. When he first came out, it's like, okay, you know, what's going on? So you're this Swiss guy. We have no idea what you are. But the second he started showing personality, and then they started holding him back, mm-hmm. you know, holding back his swing. I mean, that's just dumb.
Yeah.
So I'm going to put him just on this being, you know, the swing alone.
That works.
I think Finn Balor is being held back. I mean, I think the guy's ready now. Just what I've seen, what little I've seen of him with in New Japan, I think that guy's ready to take off. I think what makes Finn Balor so good is that my personal problem is, like, I don't like his look, and I think he's too much of a pretty boy. But that look works, and it's a good look. I mean, yeah, granted, he's small. He doesn't fit the kind of WWE, you know, style in terms of how tall you are. But I mean, Seth Rollins isn't that much taller than he is. What I like about Finn Balor is that you can make him as a babyface, and he'll take off as a babyface. You know, like, I think, you know, the fans and us like him. I think he has the woman factor as well, where women will like him as well, and guys will respect him. So he can do a total face run, but I think he's even more effective as a heel, uh-huh. as just like this brash heel. And I think, you know, him not showing up yet, I think that's something within itself. I think Ambrose's character is being held back. I think Harper is being held back. That's four, right?
That's five.
Okay, so yeah, I think Harper. I think you can put a belt on Harper, like it showed. You know, he got an Intercontinental 2 week championship run, and he was really interesting when he had that belt. I think he's a great worker. You know, I'm kind of partial to that guy just because I like his style. But I think he's a guy that is untapped. Character-wise and in the ring. I mean, I don't think he's shown what he can do in the ring yet.
Yeah.
And the guy can pull off a flipping hurricane run. Give me a break, so.
Honorable mention, you know, this King of the Ring notwithstanding, I think Wade has been
horribly
misused.
Me not putting Wade in that top five is just shows how bad this guy's being held back.
Right, yeah. And, I mean, you know, we'll see if they... Every time that they look like they're going to start pushing this guy, then, like, they start screwing around and making him lose to Sin Cara for no reason, and then like he gets hurt. Right. That's the problem. That's the biggest problem with Wade.
Every time he falls out of the ring or whatever, and he says "ow," I'm like, oh man, like it happened at Raw. He's like, oh, I was like, did he hurt himself? Like they show that one drop that he took on his back. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh great, he's going to be gone for 8 months again.
Yeah, but no, Wade's awesome, dude. I hope this King of the Ring does something for him. Last time, I think the last King of the Ring was Sheamus. And I think they basically used it as a rib on him because he had heat backstage. And they turned him into kind of a joke of a character.
Yeah.
So I hope that's not what happens with Wade. I hope he gets a solid run here because I think Wade could do so much. I think Wade's awesome.
Well, the track record for King of the Ring winners hasn't been all that. I mean, I think you have Stone Cold and Triple H that has... They've benefited from it. But everybody, like Badass Billy Gunn...
Did Bret Hart get any benefit?
Bret Hart, I mean...
That happened at the time when I wasn't really...
Well, I mean, that was like when it was first... Well, I mean, it was... Bret Hart was already hot. So,
Is the argument making, like, it didn't do anything for him because he was already hot?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And then let me ask this, because they... Okay. How did Harley Race become the king? Did he win a King of the Ring, or he's just anointed the king?
I heard that they tried to say that he won a King of the Ring tournament. I just remember him being the king. Because they didn't have pay-per-views back then.
And even like Haku, he didn't win it, right? They just bestowed it upon him.
So what happened was, so Harley Race won, and then I think, what's his name, the Ho guy, he beat...
Duggan.
Yeah, Duggan won it, and then Duggan beat Harley Race, so he got it, and then Macho Man beat Duggan, and I think someone else got it, or it might have been Haku that won it. So, and then after that, I think Haku was the last guy to kind of carry it. So, but that was like the king, you know, like the king. Yeah. The king that came in and became the king. And,
yeah, well, because they're trying. I mean, the way that they were building up the promo for the King of the Ring, they're making it seem like Harley Race won the crown, which I never thought was the case. And then they made no mention of Haku, so I didn't know. I know exactly what they were doing with who they were saying. They never mentioned Regal. I thought Regal was a pretty good king. I'm just partial to Regal, so pretty much like whatever Regal does. Recent years, it hasn't meant much, right? So they're still trying to hold on to the importance that it had, like early on when people won King of the Ring. But yeah, in recent years, it's been not much, and they really used it to poke fun at Sheamus the last time he had the thing. I think Sheamus is doing pretty well.
Sheamus is doing well. I mean, the whole kiss me arse thing. I mean, it's
that's not his fault. But yeah. I think what he's doing, like he's putting pretty good work in the ring. Character wise, he is so much more fun to watch and interesting as this kind of like monster heel. It's a little weak, like the whole like I just want to go like after small people. Again, that's not really his fault. That's just what they're having him do. But like the character that he is what he should be. I like this version of Sheamus.
In his ring work, he's not doing the same thing over. Like when he was a face, he had the same spots over and over, like the white noise or whatever. To tell you the truth, like his entrance with that straight white light, and he kind of blends into that white light. It works, dude. You know. So yeah, I mean, Sheamus is like one of these kind of like. You know, we've been calling for him. I mean, it's not just us, but everybody's been calling for this guy to be a heel. And, you know, he's doing well. And that's kind of like the whole thing. Is like they tried making him like John Cena 2.0, and it really didn't work. He had the personality for it, but it just there wasn't any, you know, I don't know. There's just something, you know, like you have this formula for like a big-time superstar, and it doesn't always work. I'll give John Cena some credit where his character, you can hang your hat on the idea of what John Cena is, but it just gets tired after a while.
I like how you worded that.
How did I word it? I don't even remember how I worded it.
You can hang your hat on the idea of John Cena.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well said. Yeah, no, yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, I think a program with Sheamus and Dolph, I think that should be good. I think it's good they've established that Dolph can beat him. Definitely, we know Sheamus can beat Dolph. A guy like Dolph can make anybody look good, as we've said many times, but... Like for, I think the chemistry with him and Sheamus is there. I don't like the Neville aspect, but like also kind of like the Wade Barrett side of it, I think also it is pretty good also. I wouldn't mind seeing some kind of team up with Sheamus and Barrett, right? They've kind of teased it a little bit. I've always kind of had an idea that like those guys together would be a pretty nice little team. You know, they're both big, athletic, you know, tough guys. I think it could work. But you know, I think if they stay on their own and they keep doing what they're doing, I'm fine with that too.
New Day, then winning the tag belt. So first of all, do you think that Cesaro and Kidd had enough time with those belts?
No. So I had a lot of emotions in that match.
Well, before you get into that, well, I sip on my water real quick. JBL was just pulling out all these like stupid like pop culture references that just didn't make any sense. Like he pulled one out like it was like a 9 month old like reference to something, and it's just JBL hasn't been that good on the mic recently.
Are you talking about with New Day match or?
I'm trying to remember what it was some like obscure reference that I just didn't get why he said it, and then he said, you know, then he's kind of like, you know, he just kind of like his commentary now is like there's no direction to it. Like he hates some guy or he likes some guy. It just seems like I think he suffered from with Booker T. Granted, Booker T as a commentator is just terrible. I mean he's just bad.
He's blasting me right there.
Oh, he's bad. You know he's bad. Dude. You know, but you know like Booker T. Booker
saved
T.
Me from 3 hours of the King.
Yeah, Booker T. Cut off JBL, and JBL's like, well, go ahead, and Booker T's like, wow, look at that, and it's like, okay, you know, this guy does get paid to say this. It's just, so that's really bad. Are you going to sneeze?
I'm fighting, man, I told you that when I came in here.
Well, sneeze in your sleeve or something, you say, so you
I'm
don't.
I'm not going to sneeze on you, man.
I don't want you to sneeze on me. I'm saying, this is for the audio, dude. I don't want to hear you sneezing and, take a deep breath, man. There you go. Eyes are all glazing over.
They're all watery.
They're all watery. Okay, so go ahead and get into what you wanted to say about New Day.
So, I had a lot of emotions during this match because, frankly, I think it might have been the best match on the show. It was a really good match. And, you know, New Day is starting to get over as heels. And the way that, with the Chicago crowd... you know, Cesaro and Kidd were the faces, right? And so you got these two guys who, you know, because the Usos, there's that Uso injury, they're pretty much there to carry the tag team division at this point. And it's not the greatest opportunity, but it's the best one that both of them can get, and I think they're making the most of it. And I think they're in the middle of what could, if they let it play itself out, be like a really, really good tag team. And then you top that off with the way the match went. They were the baby faces. Chicago was behind them. They were putting on the show. But the thing is, I'm watching the match, and just everything while I'm watching it, even though in my mind, you know, leading into it, I want Kidd and Cesaro to win. Everything in my mind is saying, like, you know, I think New Day's going to win this, and I'm not mad at it because they're putting on a hell of a match right now. And, like, everything just worked. Like, I really like... the element that Xavier Woods is bringing, and that's crazy for me to say this. Not anything in particular that he says, or, you know, he obviously really doesn't wrestle, but, like, he's doing a really good job of interfering in ways that are not your tried and true, like, hey, ref, come over here, right? It's like he had the one spot where he came out from under the ring and grabbed the Lucha Dragon and didn't let him in. And then on the Raw, he had the one where the guy fell down, Big E fell down on Kidd, I think, and then, like, he reached over and he held Kidd's foot down so Kidd couldn't kick out. It's not your tried-and-true, like, boring old, like stupid referee distractions. Like, I think he's doing a good job of helping them hold on to these titles. But they put on a really good match, and like, I think they're doing a really good job with a terrible gimmick. And so... being what the tag team division is, like, you got a bunch of pretty good teams out there, and any one of them can hold the belt. I don't have a big problem with it, though I think it does suck for Cesaro and Kidd, because I think you're looking at two guys that can really work that have been, you know, Kid obviously a lot longer, but been in WWE and essentially done everything that WWE's asked them to do, and generally not gotten much to show for it. And now, like, it's like, you know, Usos are a great tag team, but they're not here. You're the team that needs to carry this division, and then feels like that title run is stunted now. Yeah, you know, I'm pretty sure they will get the thing back, but it was a really good match. And then at the end of it, you know, I didn't want them to lose, but I was like, this was a good match, and I felt like New Day deserved to win the match. Like, Kofi was good in it, Big E was good in it, interference was good, everything worked.
So with the Usos being out, I think was it is Jay the one that's hurt?
I don't know.
Jay or Jimmy? One of the Jays are. Oh, yeah. Is the other guy, is he primed for like a singles run? Do you think that guy's going to get a singles run?
I don't know, man. I would have thought that if he was going to get a singles run, that they would give it to him already, or he'd be doing something. I think there's one of two ways that you could go with it. You could either have him do a singles run, which I think would be interesting. I think he fits in well with like all those mid-card wrestlers that they have. But I also think, like, hey, maybe you just keep the Usos away and have them, like, kind of reinvent what their character is going to be when they come back. And then, because I think they'll always work better as a tag team than as singles wrestlers. So I think if they want to just keep both of them off TV, have them reinvent what their character is, and then when they come back, be a little more fresh of characters, but bring the same, like, in-ring tag team work that they do, I think that's fine. I think the other side of it too is, I don't know what the commitment level is, but with his wife being heel now, maybe they come back as a heel tag team with her or something. I'm not suggesting that's what they do. I'm just saying, like, if they're going to go through a character change, like, you got that element out there. But I don't know what the commitment is to her being a heel anyway.
Brother versus brother. How about that?
Yeah, no. That's the last thing I want to see.
Last thing, my boy Damian Sandow, what would you think of his segment?
So I kind of missed that segment.
Okay, let's move on.
Recap me, because I didn't realize I missed it until the next day. So.
That was the one where Curtis Axel came out. So first of all, Sandow came out, said that he was Damian Sandow. Nice little build-up, you know, with the way he kind of says Damian Sandow. He thanked the fans and just kind of, I think he ran through all of his characters, you know, like the Magneto one and all the stupid characters that he kind of did. And he was trying to, he said how he, when he first came in, he was wearing a robe and saying that he was smarter than everybody else. And then he just kind of, he realized that it was more about entertaining the fans, and that's what he was trying to do. And, you know, he's like, if he wasn't for you guys, I wouldn't have a job. This, that, and this. Axel comes out, plays the foil. He disposes of Axel pretty fast. It wasn't a match. And then, Axel's saying stuff, and then Sandow's starting to mimic him. And, you know, Axel's getting all mad, and, you know, don't do that, this, that, and this. And then Axel gets thrown out, something like that. And people are, like, people are having the signs that say you're welcome and stuff and everything, and they're kind of waiting for him to say it. So he says you're welcome and just kind of has, like, a, you know, because of you fan, blah, blah, blah type of bit. So I just don't know if there's a future with this guy as well. I mean, I think it's just another guy too.
I noticed he didn't make your top five guys being held back.
Well, if it was the Damian Sandow character when he came, I mean, his first character, then definitely, because I think that character works. I really like that character. And I don't know why they stopped him from being that character, because that character worked. When he was coming out, I mean, he has to, like, you know, beg the indulgence of, you know, this stuff. That stuff works. He did his, so he was going to do, like, the, you know, the leg drop, like Hulk Hogan's leg drop and stuff, right? And then he stops and he does the elbow of despair. And then he does a leg drop after that. Disdain, whatever it is. I think his first character, that's where the money is. I mean, and I really like that character, and just, it was good. And the whole thing is, what people forget was that when he was that character, he was doing mic promos in the middle of the ring and having people come in and ask him questions and stuff. That stuff worked really well. Uh-huh. And so it's just kind of a, you know, now he's kind of like a quasi-fan favorite, this, that, and this. I just don't see a future in that as well. But I think he is another guy that's going to be held back. I'm just kind of afraid that he's going to get lost by the wayside with that.
Yeah, another guy where...
Because you haven't seen him wrestle. in like a year or 2 years. He hasn't really wrestled.
Just with The Miz, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's another guy where I think there's a lot of things that you could do with him, but there doesn't seem to be any place within the story for what they want to do with the guy, so. I mean, it's disappointing, but at the same time, it's a pretty full roster. So I don't know. I can't sit here and say I have any idea what they should really do with him. I mean, I think if he were to go back to that character, I think it works. But even if he does, then what do you do with him, right? Like, there's no feud to put him in. But I'd like to see him just go back to at least wrestling and working consistently and being like a legitimate guy. He's funny, so I know he kind of took over that comedy gimmick, but he's more than just that, right? He's not Santino, and I don't want to see him treated like Santino.
Yeah. All right, so we're definitely in a lull right now where storylines are kind of finishing. New ones are going to happen. We don't know what the new storylines are going to be. It's kind of a case where you're looking at the roster top to bottom. I mean, you have Stardust too, and there's another guy that is not being utilized. Yeah. I mean,
just since you're bringing them up, I mean, those are two guys that you could throw together and reunite that tag team that they were, and they're as good as anybody right now.
Well, not as that Stardust character. I mean, you can't.
Right, right, but.
But you might have Sandow can be Sandust and dress up and do all that stuff, right?
Dress up like Goldust.
Yeah. It's just from top to bottom. I mean, you talk about the tag team division as well. It's like you have the Lucha Dragons. You have the Primetime Players who haven't really wrestled at all either. So you have four legitimate tag teams. I think there's some pairings that you can do with some of the stars that you have right now. I mean, you can throw some tag teams together as well from some bigger names. And
I think they'd be wise to do that. I think they've gotten to this point where they have all of these singles wrestlers, and then they're trying to have a tag team division, but they only have a limited amount of teams. And I think it'd be a good idea for them to take some of these singles guys that aren't going anywhere and let them team up, and put them in the tag team run and see what happens.
I say you put Neville and Ryback together. You know, put those two guys together, have like a Power and Glory type of. I think that might be a case where it might actually work really, really well. You know, I mean, those guys are single. I don't know. I just Neville. I don't get the whole. I'm not on board with this guy, Dean.
Look, here's my problem with Neville, and it's not even as much my problem with Neville, but it's more with the reaction to Neville. Okay, so these very same people that wanna run down Roman Reigns and say like Roman Reigns didn't pay his dues and Roman Reigns shouldn't be in the in the main event at WrestleMania are the same people that are going nuts for Neville, who went through the exact same system and the exact same system Roman Reigns did through NXT. And gets hotshotted like to win pay-per-view matches within 1 month of being on the show when Reigns was there putting in work for 2 years. And now, granted, Neville has he has more of a independent following because of his work on the indie scene. Okay, but if your complaint was Roman Reigns didn't pay his dues, Roman Reigns wasn't there long enough, therefore I don't want Roman Reigns to be winning pay-per-view matches and being in main events. But then right immediately. Neville gets there and people want him to beat main eventers, guys that are way ahead of him. It's just insane that people don't see the hypocrisy in their commentary. Like I read this one person who said she says that Neville has the best debut of any NXT to WWE person ever. I'm like, girl, you fangirl over Dean Ambrose day after day after day. And then have the balls to say that this little.
But she doesn't have the balls. Not that we
apparently she did.
Not that we know of.
Well,
maybe she talks in a really low voice that you don't know because she's on Twitter.
She looked like she might have a low voice.
Hi guys.
Yeah. Hi Joni. Yeah, raspy. But no, it's you fangirl over Ambrose, and fine, rightfully so. Ambrose has been putting in work, but don't tell me that. that this little 1 month like run that Neville's been on is better than what the Shield did, on top of what those three guys have all done, like as singles wrestlers out. It's just insane.
I'm getting tired of any indie type cred. You know, I'm getting tired of the indie cred. I mean, like, okay, if you're an indie wrestler, it doesn't mean that you should have, you know, that automatically you should be pushed up in the spotlight. I mean, you have certain cases where in a Daniel Bryan, in a CM Punk, where they toiled for like 5-7 years.
Seth Rollins.
Yes, yeah, so, you know, I don't know too much about Seth Rollins' background, but the whole thing is that Seth. Anybody that says that Shield, any member of the Shield is being hotshotted is garbage, because they changed the landscape of wrestling. You know what I mean? They were one of the hottest factions in a long time, and all three guys worked really well together. You cannot get that type of unity in terms of a faction or even having people like you as much if you're not doing work in the ring. And the whole thing was that, were they protected? Yeah, they were protected and they're able to shine. But you know, you can push anybody. You can push, you know, Bo Dallas and have Bo Dallas not lose for 3 months, but you're not sitting there going like, oh, you know, Bo Dallas is the greatest thing ever. We're going like, dude, this thing that he's doing, it's like, okay, you know, the character's fine, but it's not there.
Yeah.
Well, these three guys were given a chance to shine, and they ran pay-per-views. You know, I mean, the WrestleMania, you know, their first WrestleMania, you know, appearance as the Shield was epic. It was like the first match, and it's just, you're sitting there just going crazy. Then you have the Royal Rumble one, where, yeah, you know, they're pushing Roman Reigns and they're pushing the Shield and stuff, but the whole thing is that when you're pushing them, they're doing a great job in the ring, and you're sitting there and you're just sitting there in amazement going like, wow, like Roman Reigns is getting it done. Royal Rumble's the same way. The other one, the Survivor Series, is the exact same thing. Well, I really don't care about indie cred, dude. I mean, it's like, just because you have you watch some fuck in some arena that only had 70 people, you know,
some high school gym.
Yeah, and you're saying like, oh, I've been there since the beginning, and this guy will take off in WWE. It's like, give me a break, dude. You know, it's like he's okay. Is he a good performer? Yeah, he's a good performer, but you know, he shouldn't be getting pushed the way that he's getting pushed right now. There's no way that he should have. He beat some major guy on Raw. I don't know if it was Sheamus. It was Sheamus' second match, or I don't know what it was, but you know, I think he did beat Sheamus.
He beat Sheamus on the pay per view.
Yeah. Okay.
Or not the pay per view, on King of the Ring on the network last
yeah.
night. Not on.
Okay.
Raw. He beat somebody else to get into that match.
Yeah.
But yes, someone else that he shouldn't have beaten.
Yeah. And the whole thing was a case where, you know, you still have to position the guy for his finishing move. Like they, that was a botch in that last move.
Harper? Did he beat Harper?
Yeah, it was Harper. He beat Harper. Yeah. Yeah, he beats Harper.
That was the move. It was Harper ran at him, and then he sidestepped it, and Harper hit the ropes.
Yeah.
And then he went behind him, and he grabbed him, and he just laid. He didn't lift him at all.
Yeah.
He just laid back and did like a reverse, like a German suplex
yeah.
on him.
But even like, you know, like Daniel Bryan's, like, you know, because I think it's the kind of the Daniel Bryan syndrome, and even to a small part, the CM Punk syndrome, where, you know, these guys take off and they become major names in the business. Well, I mean, CM Punk was, you know, wrestling. I mean, you talk about a guy that paid his dues. He paid his dues. Daniel Bryan got fired. He came back, and then he got
fired like several times.
Yeah, he came back. You know, I don't want to say stumbled upon, but he found a winning formula for his matches. Where for probably about a month, 2 months, his matches, you're sitting there just going like, man, this guy's unbelievable. Well, he never stepped up after that and did anything different. So it's just kind of the whole kind of like indie thing. It's like, you know, it's like, okay, that's fine, but you have a guy like Bray Wyatt, you have a guy like Roman Reigns, you have a guy like Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose they've been indie guys as well, but they went through the system, you know, of the WWE system, and to get hotshotted with like, you know, this guy with these flipping ears and this, you know, the finishing move, yeah, great, it's fine, but you know what? I'd rather see Billy Kidman's Acai Moonsault, whatever his finisher used to do, the 7 year itch. I mean, I thought that move was a lot better than what this guy's doing. It's a gimmick move, dude. You know, it's like, it doesn't. Who cares, man? I mean, it's like the one that he hit on Harper is like, okay, you hit it, but that's your finishing move. I mean, you know, it's like what you're having 180 pounds on, you know, hitting
land on a guy that's 350.
Yeah, and that's supposed to. I'm supposed to be thrilled about that. I'm supposed to, like Seamus would say, I'm supposed to be entertained about that. So, you know, whatever, dude.
Yeah. Well, it's just, I think, I'm gonna sum it up like this. Just because the guy was on the indies doesn't mean that doesn't automatically make him better than some guy that came up through the NXT system. Right now, like, here's your guys, and like you mentioned CM Punk. I think CM Punk and Ambrose are like the two prime examples. I think Rollins and Daniel Bryan learned it along the way. But like these guys that go on the indies, if they can work, right? Second thing, if they can cut a promo. And I think CM Punk had that, and I think Dean Ambrose had that naturally. Now, I think that Daniel Bryan didn't have it naturally, but like you said, ultimately he found something that works. And I think Seth is kind of the same, right? Like, he was the third guy on the promo when Shield started, but halfway through the run, he became an equal part to each one of those guys.
Because he was doing it in the ring at the same time.
Right, but then he also, well, he was doing it in the ring from day one, but then you could just see the progression with him on the mic, and they had something, and they figured it out, and they used it. And that's what makes a complete star, right? And the guys like Neville, it's like, sure, like he can have his moveset.
I'm going to give credit to Neville. I mean Neville, his ring style, what he does in the ring, I respect it. I mean, I respect that kind of aerial, hard-nosed, you know, English style. So, I mean, he does have that. I mean, he does have potential, but it's like, don't shove him down my throat, you know? And you're right. I mean, it's like people get mad about Roman Reigns, and they're not getting mad about this guy. But go ahead.
Yeah, well, it's just like, if Neville can get to that point where, you know, he's got a legitimate promo, and then good for him, right? But don't act like that side of the business doesn't mean like 50% of what the show is, right? If you don't have any charisma and you don't have any personality or anything, then you're very limited in what you can bring to the table.
And at the same time, you have the three announcers just talking this guy up like crazy, and Booker T is sounding like a flipping idiot. It's like it's not doing him any favors, and it's just a case. It's kind of like the same thing. Like we bring up Rusev and how Rusev, you know, he's probably destined to fail. Well, I mean, you're building this guy up. You're building up like a paper champion, but he's not going to be champion. He's going to be like a paper wrestler. And what happens when that pushes over?
I mean, it's going to be exactly like what. This is the exact same way they built up Big E, right? Built him up all huge. Like, within the first, like, couple of weeks, like, all JBL, this guy's a future world champion, like, every single time. And then, you know, they run him through and they decide to, you know, split him up with the Ziggler and AJ Lee faction, and then he's nothing. He goes nowhere.
And I think that's the perfect... I think if Big E can't get over with what he was doing. I mean, he's an intercontinental champ. He was facing the top guys and holding his own, and all of a sudden they decided to get away from him. And that was like kind of the other thing too, is like, you know, Big E had a lot of things going for him. One, he's huge. He had a great entrance song. They fucked that up. And then, and he was an African-American wrestler, which they were kind of looking for kind of a guy that can cross over that way.
He's athletic.
Yeah. I mean, he's a better right back. You know, and the whole thing is that they never gave him the chance on the mic. I think Big E can probably cut one of the best promos. I think he's a great promo cutter. I don't think he's ever given the opportunity, but I think he can cut a good promo if they ever gave him the opportunity to do it. And it's just kind of a whole thing where if this guy can't take off, well, how is a guy like Neville going to take off? And the sad thing is that Neville will probably have more success than Big E would. And it's nice to see that Big E, you know, when New Day came out with the belts, and I see Xavier Woods with the belt on, and I see Big E with the belt on, and I see Kofi Kingston, I was like, finally, these guys have done something. You know, finally, like, they're living to some type of potential that they have. And, you know, you have a guy like, you know, Big E, you know, if they ever decide to go with this guy, he can say he's been an Intercontinental Champion. They can say that he can say he's been a Tag Team Champion, and whatever he wants to do after that. You know, so there's opportunities there. But it's just kind of, you know, it's kind of... We've asked for this type of universe, right? We asked for everything that we wanted is there, but now when we've gotten everything, it's kind of like, okay, where do we go from here? And I think there's a lot of potential with the mid card. I think there's a lot of the roster is deep. I just don't think the WWE knows how to work with a roster that's been that deep for a long time. you have these foils that they have to be foils, and the fan doesn't want to see them as a foil. You know, I don't want to see Luke Harper lose all the time. I don't want to see Bray Wyatt lose all the time. I don't want to see Wade Barrett lose all the time. It's like, push these guys, but how do you do it? You know, like, the feud is, like, non-existent now. Like, how do you do it?
Well, the only way you can do it is if you let them start beating some of the guys that are higher up on the card than them. And that's, they're protecting, in some cases, the wrong guys, and then in some cases, they're just protecting too many guys.
Well, do you think guys like Cena, Daniel Bryan, Kane, Big Show, I mean, do you think they deserve, like, some type of protection, though? I mean, because this is a, you know, these guys are the ones that have enabled these mid-card guys to kind of establish themselves and kind of create, you know, this universe that's there right now. I mean, you look at the roster now, you look at the roster when we first started doing this podcast 3 years ago, the roster was really thin. But do you think these guys deserve to be protected?
Some of them do. I mean, John Cena gets way more protection than he deserves. I mean, that's a given. I think Big Show deserves a certain amount of protection. I don't think Kane is really protected at this point. Kane's just not entertaining.
With the recent stuff that he's been doing?
I mean, that's the best thing he's done in a year to 2 years. It's not good. It's just better. And there's really no legs. There's no sustainability to it. Because either he's just going to end up being a lackey, or he's going to turn, and then they're going to try to put him on some babyface run, which absolutely wouldn't go anywhere. So I don't see any sustainability in that. But for the moment, for the time being, it's okay. But John Cena, yeah, he's too protected. He should lose and elevate somebody every once in a while. Big Show does jobs, so I can't say he's too protected, but he deserves a level of protection because of who he is and what he's done. Roman's very protected right now, but I think you need to do that. Seth, obviously, and rightfully so.
Is there a missed opportunity, though, with Roman Reigns? I mean, because here's the thing. The opening of Raw, when you have Ambrose getting overpowered by everybody, and Roman Reigns comes in. Roman Reigns and Ambrose together, I mean, that's big. I mean, that's like, I'm watching it going like, yeah, I'm like, how come we can't have, I mean, that's tailor-made. I mean, that's how you can really start making Roman Reigns a fan favorite again. But had they lost something with Roman Reigns where he was getting all this heat and kind of like with the New Day, like, you know, they were trying to make him like a babyface team. They started getting negative heat, and now they're relishing the role of being a heel. Had they lost something that with Roman Reigns, I think Roman Reigns is like perfect to be like a monster heel right now.
I think so, but I think if they were going to do that, it should have came straight out of WrestleMania. So, yeah, maybe that's lost a little bit. But it seems like he's getting a little bit of a recovery. Seemed like he had a ton of heat going into Mania and coming out of it, depending on what city that he was in. But it seems like the last few weeks the crowd has been more behind what he's doing. So, who knows? I mean, I think that they should let him be him, and I think he can be his own personality and still be a babyface without being cheesy. But I think that they are protecting him a little too much, because some of the matches that he's in, he's taken an enormous amount of punishment, and then that starts getting into like the John Cena level that people don't want to see him get into.
All right, so you ready to get into our segments?
Sure.
For something where we didn't really have any direction on this podcast, we were able to, you know, there are some dark times in the beginning of this podcast. We're going like, what the heck are we going to talk about? But, you know, I'm glad we were able to come through. So let's start getting into our mic. I don't know if it's golden. I don't know if it's bad. We'll find out.
My distinguished guest from the Middle East, he's from Persia, from Iran. He is Sheikh Alahani, Khosrow Vasari, the Iron Sheik. Anybody that knows wrestling knows that it's synonymous with the Iron Sheik. Welcome back to the beautiful South Florida area here in Miami.
Thank you very much, Jimin, intelligent American, intelligent Miami City, all American resting city, people like you always tell the music, welcome to the Miami. Now, all of the songs, young punk American, come to the WWF, toughest, roughest area in the world, and he beat bunch of American, and he make a name for himself. You know who I'm talking about,
right? I know exactly.
Exactly, now. Miami, all intelligent American, Italian, my Banzan, Iranian, all Jewish people,
yeah.
Intelligent Jew like yourself, they know about the Arab Sheikh. They know who's the Arab Sheikh. They have the from John F. Kennedy Airport to the Los Angeles, California, they know who's the Arab Sheikh. Now. Corporal Kirchner.
Corporal Kirchner.
Forever. Last time you was lucky that Blown was your partner.
Danny Spivey.
Exactly. This time just you and I.
Precisely.
Exactly. You better get ready because she's born ready. Cameraman, troops.
So much. Thank you. Miami Sight Center, Monday, April 28th.
I don't know what he was saying for most of that, but it was good. Gene did an excellent job of translating. Let me know that it was Danny Spivey who we were talking about, and Corporal Kirchner, whoever the hell that is. I don't know. In his second career here, is just being this like crazy old guy on the internet. Like, I don't know. He's reinvented himself. So now going back, like, it makes every promo that he's done, I think, a little bit better. To realize, like, as crazy as he was there, that was probably only about 25% of what the Iron Sheik is. When you ask him to start talking about any subject, you still can't understand like half of what he's saying. But like, it was pretty well delivered. Miami,
the city of Miami, the city.
Intelligent Jews.
Yeah.
The Iron Sheik.
I was trying to do the whole. Well, at the end, he was telling the cameraman to zoom it, you know, so he could flex his muscles. And actually, the funny thing was that when he started talking about L.A. and all this stuff and everything, like, Gene, like, had to cover his mouth up because he's kind of starting to laugh a little bit. First time I seen Gene, like, kind of not be able to contain himself with it. But, good stuff all around. I was actually looking for his WrestleMania 3 promo where he's talking about his 22-inch neck and his 22-inch arm. And
tomorrow night, 1,000 people going to say USK. But I'm going to butter us.
Butter me. So, Hall of Kayfabe, you got someone?
Possibly. You got someone?
I don't think so.
Well, there's the one name that I was thinking of is actually kind of funny because you mentioned him earlier. And that was Kidman. I think he'd be the third member of the former Ravens flock that would make it in with Raven, Perry Saturn, and Kidman. And like,
as long as Van Hammer doesn't get in there, or Loki,
it's Lodi.
Lodi, yeah, same thing. It doesn't matter.
No, don't besmirch Loki, okay? No, but you know, Kidman, in a time where WCW was loaded with cruiserweights and specifically like oversaturated with all these luchadors, he stood out as a really good like high flyer type cruiserweight. I thought he was really good. I thought in that time he was pretty well on par with like the Hardys. He had the what you call the 7-year itch, which was what's the actual name of that move?
It's not an aside moonsault. What was it called? It was called something. I don't know.
It's a shooting star. Is it shooting star?
Shooting star
press.
Yeah,
I think it was a shooting star press. It was a really good one. He got a ton of height on that. It worked well with him being the smallish guy because they had that whole like gang faction thing going. And then he was the one guy that was kind of the tweener on that team, where like people liked him, people wanted to get behind him. He didn't do all the heelish stuff necessarily. And then it was a good dynamic because like you could see where like, there was times where he wanted to break away and he couldn't break out from. Like whatever mental hold that Raven supposedly had on these guys, but then when he did break away, and I think he got with Torrie Wilson, and he became a fan favorite. Like he had a pretty solid run there too, and he was one of the few guys that that went over to WWE, like right after the purchase.
Well, he fell into the trap of trying to get bigger. You know, I think he, you know, he tried to bulk himself up, and I think that really took away from his character. Just like I think when Benoit bulked up, you know, something was lost with Benoit when he got really big. But yeah, I mean, yeah, just he was one of those guys. Like I remember when he first joined the flock, he itched a lot. Like, so he had to scratch himself a lot, and I thought that was kind of stupid. But he bought into it so well, and then you throw in his Shooting Star Press, which was probably the best in the business at that time. Really was doing it before Jeff Hardy was doing his stuff. And the whole thing was that, you know, he could, you know, you could call him an aerialist, but he didn't rely on it. You know, he could do other things in the ring, just like a nice kind of, I wouldn't say hard style, but just like a really technical style. And then you could throw in the high flying stuff, and he had enough height, and he had enough, I wouldn't say power, but I mean, he was legitimate in the ring. Like, it wasn't like he didn't really,
formidable.
Yeah, he didn't have any spots where a guy had to carry him.
Right.
You know, and the whole thing was, he was a better technician in terms of, he didn't have to set the guy up perfect to hit it, you know, to hit his move. And that's one problem I have with Neville. It's like, it has to be very specific of where this guy's going to be. But yeah, I mean, you know, I think he definitely got lost by the wayside. I think he was part of New Blood for a while. Like, he was like the main like kind of guy with New Blood, with WCW. And
I think he was Filthy Animals.
Filthy Animals was with Mysterio and the other guy.
And Guerrero. I think he ended up in there after.
With the other group, not the lesser Guerrero, not Eddie Guerrero. It might have been
Chavo and
Mysterio. It was Odele.
Conan.
It was Conan, yeah. So I think he was more like the New Blood. He was like a guy that they were trying to hang the hat on and like kind of try to be a small champion. Mm-hmm. But WCW was so messed up by that time that it really didn't gain any traction. And then he goes to WWE and just gets lost by the wayside there because his look, I mean, it was like he kind of had the look when
with a clean shirt.
Well, it was just like he was kind of like just bulky and, you know, and his style really didn't match his body type. It's kind of like the case with Ralph Macchio in the Karate Kid. You know, like Ralph Macchio when he first did the Karate Kid, he was all small, and then by Karate Kid 3, the guy's like he has like a big old fat ass and stuff, and like you're like, dude, like how old are you, dude? Because you look like you're like 45 talking to Mr. Miyagi. You're supposed to be like 25 or 24 or something like that. I just don't understand, like in Karate Kid 3, how you know, like there's like this quasi love interest, but she has a boyfriend, and like her boyfriend's like a rock climber in Minnesota or some shit like that. And so they go out on a date, and in Daniel San's mind, he's like, "It's okay, so we're gonna go on a date, but let me introduce you to my 85-year-old Japanese friend real fast. You're gonna love this guy." It's like, dude, I'm like, really, dude? I'm like, are you that bad of a? Is your game so bad that you're gonna take this chick out? But the first thing you're gonna do is you're gonna take him and go meet Mr. Miyagi in his little tree shop, dude.
Yeah. While he's catching flies with chopsticks.
Yeah, it's like, are you sure, Daniel, said that you can fit through that door? Because I don't think your ass is gonna fit through that door, Daniel. So that's on another side right there. So
yeah, I can't speak to that.
Yeah.
On Karate Kid knowledge.
that's a good thing.
In no way am I ashamed.
All right, so
it always gets me to like chortle inside when you start going off on some like a Karate Kid tangent.
Well, I mean, if you're gonna go on a date with some girl that you had no chance with, first of all, you wouldn't even do that, right? Like, hey, so I have no chance at getting at you, but let's go on a date anyways, and let's have a nice time. Like, what's the point of that? And then at the same time, it's like, your mom's not around, you know, you have the crib all to yourself, but instead, you're gonna drive this girl to go meet Mr. Miyagi, you know, like, let's meet my friend Mr. Miyagi, and the girl, for some inexplicable reason, keeps on talking to Daniel-san, right? And that was the point where, like, they go to, like, to some, like, little underground club and something like that, and Daniel was going over to the dark side, being taught by this Cobra Kai guy, and he punched, you know, so this guy pays this guy to like hit on this girl that he's with, and then through the training of this guy, Michael Ian Smith, who played the guy with the ponytail and stuff and everything, he pays off this guy and says, hey, go bother this guy, and then he doesn't end up paying him, and then Danielson just pops him in the nose. Blood starts flowing all over the place, and this girl still goes back to him, even though she has a boyfriend in Minnesota.
great boyfriend in Minnesota, rock climber.
I just
Michael Ian Smith. Yeah. He's punk. He's fag. Worse than Michael Michael Jackson.
Fuck you, John Kreese.
I think the worst thing on that whole segment there was that you actually knew who the actor Michael Ian Smith was, hey, and the name of the actor that played that.
Well, here's the thing. The guy's a millionaire, right? He's friends with John Kreese, who's the original Cobra Kai guy. And this guy, like, clears his schedule for a week to, like, fuck with Danielson. Like, this guy's doing hostile takeovers all over the place, right? Like, they introduce him. He's in a hot tub with his portable phone, which is a hazard unto itself. And he's like, I think I'm going to take a week off and just ruin this 19-year-old boy's dreams. That's bigger than my mom.
Yeah. Now, where did they reside? Were they in Okinawa when this was happening?
That's Karate Kid 2.
Right, no, that's Karate Kid 2. That's why they're still there for three.
It was L.A. Okay. Yeah, but this millionaire decided to take a week off. He probably lost, like, you know, $3 million because he didn't take over another company or whatever it was.
Now, is that $3 million in, like, the modern economy, or are you...
$3 million back then.
$3 million in 1986.
Because he had the ponytail, you know?
And the Zach Morris phone.
He did have the Zach Morris phone, yeah. But Zach Morris rocked it better. The worst ponytails I've ever seen in movies is one by Michael Ian Smith. And the other one was in Mr. Baseball with Tom Selleck. And his agent was sporting the ponytail as well. That wasn't a good look back then, you know. The
braided ponytail.
Well, it wasn't braided; it's just like a grease. You know, your hair's all greased back, and you put in a ponytail and stuff. I'm like
Steven Seagal.
Yeah, like that. Yeah, the guy from Mr. Baseball actually had a worse ponytail than Steven Seagal did, if that can even be the case.
Now, what if they had replaced Michael Ian Smith with Steven Seagal in those Karate Kid movies?
They would have to have an ass off because Steven Seagal had a pretty big ass too.
Not at that time. At that time, he's all about the karate.
Whatever, dude. You know more about Steven Seagal than I do.
Well, Rome's gone on many Seagal tangents.
Okay, that's why you know more about Seagal than I do.
Yes.
And there's no way that I'm ashamed about that. Game of Thrones. It's been a very slow first three episodes, don't you think?
Yeah, but I'm fine with it. I mean, it's a story-driven show.
So here's the thing. So here's the cog that's been thrown in that show. And I know there's a lot of people like, so Sansa Stark, her story arc right now is totally different from what's in the book. And so her story arc is moving a lot faster. So I know there's a lot of people going out there going like, oh, but that's not in the book, you know, this, that, and so, but I'm going like, well, you know what, it works. You know, I'm not one of these guys that reads the book and thinks I'm the authority of everything, but what they're doing with Sansa is pretty interesting with what they're doing with it.
Yeah, it's interesting enough. I really don't care about Sansa. I'm curious, like, once it starts going, then I'm sure I'll get into it. I'm curious to see what Littlefinger's going to do. But I think at this point I'm mostly interested in what Snow's doing. I like how Snow he cut this dude's head off like a G. Basically, like,
now you remember that though, right? You remember about the cutting the head off part, right? You remember? Do you know the correlation between that?
I wouldn't assume it had anything to do with.
Remember the very first episode of Game of Thrones? what was the opening scene? The opening scene, like the second opening scene with the Starks, where
was that when they were going? It had something to do with them like finding the direwolves, maybe.
Yeah, it was after that. So remember, like what's his name Stark?
Ned
Stark cut off the guy's head because he was like a he didn't do his job. Like he I think he was part of the Night Watch. So remember, they open up the Night Watch, right? I mean, those two night guys from Night Watch go out into the wild. And the White Walkers come, and so this guy like deserts his post, and they catch him. And then Ned Stark cuts off his head, and he says he's all make sure that you're the one that cuts off. You know, if you're going to be the Lord of the Land, you have to be the one to cut it off. Mm-hmm. So there's correlation between those two.
Yeah, well, I mean, I more just saw it as like a thing, like he's been voted to be the guy, and like you know he's probably pretty young to be the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, and I think he definitely knows that there's some people that, like, have some questions about him, especially considering his relationship with the Wildlings. And so that was, like, the first test, right, where the guy basically stood up to him and said he wasn't going to do something. And then, like, not until the last minute did he, like, you know, say, like, apologize. And, like, he had to set the tone right then and there that, like, he wasn't going to accept that shit. And the guy had to go. And, like, I think he made the right move.
Yeah, the two best parts I liked about it, and granted, this is where I'm going to be the book nerd and say, like, the book is a lot better how it explains it. You kind of had that correlation between Ned Stark as well. But what I really liked was, like, his main adversary
that he accepts.
The Black Watch, yeah. I mean, what's that guy's name?
Alistair?
So, is it Alistair?
Something like that. The guy that, like, was treating him like a bitch before the big battle, and then, he went and fought pretty good. Like, he did his part in that battle, too. But I think he came to respect
how he kind of moves out of the way and stuff and everything. I really like that part because there's always that tension in between there, and that's like kind of like a thing where this guy goes, okay, you know, like, all right. And then and then of course Stannis too, watching the whole thing and, you know, kind of getting Stannis brownie points as well. I thought that was really good. And we're not even talking about Daenerys yet. I mean, Daenerys, that story is going to take off pretty fast.
The dragons.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's good. It's kind of it is slow, but it's nice to not have something thrown in your face all the time. Like, cause usually, like, you know, like, it, like, it's funny, like, the first couple seasons of Game of Thrones, it was like, you know, conflict in the beginning, then you have sex, and then someone dies at the end, you know? So it's kind of nice to get away from that and just start telling the story. I mean, the only thing that sucks is that Daenerys isn't naked as much as she was in the first couple seasons, which I think what brought you into the show. And, you know, but other than that, at least it's good, you know.
It's not what brought me in. You know, I wasn't gonna fast forward those scenes. She's good. And her character is going along well. She's someone that's, like, pretty easy to root for. I'm glad the dragons are back on board, or at least the big one seems to be. So I'm sure he'll be able to get the other two in line. And I just think the way it's set up is, like, because, like, the title of the season is something like, you know, something about, like, a bunch of wars or whatever, right? So I think they're going to slow play the beginning, set up all the pieces, and then I think, like, probably the end run is just going to be, like, battle after battle after battle is my guess.
And I'm going to keep quiet about that.
I'm sure you will.
Yeah. All right, so Red Moose Skill number 108. We have Better Have My Donuts over here. Bad News Ramen over here. And Grey Ghost is right in front of us.
Where's he at?
Huh? Right, he's right in front of me.
Does he have the briefcase?
He has a briefcase. What wasn't the best? That was a good skit. But the other really good skit was the Kool G Rap and DJ Polo one, remember? Where they're singing, you know? your friend at the precinct singing his ass off like a effing bird.
That's the same one.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's how that skit ends.
Does it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think there's a Kool G Rap one that is similar like that, but I'll try to dig that up. So, Moon Scale number 108. We will come back next week, and my man over here will have his crumpled piece of paper, and we'll be good to go.
It's a fly love song. To the effect of nothing, effective fronting is what I don't allow, so let me tell you something. I am a bona fide. Not too modest and not a lot of pride. Soon to have a ride and a home to reside. If my mama is sick, I'm by her bedside. Used to watch the show on Channel 4 called Riptide. Wash my wares inside because it's too damn cold outside. That's how the runnings go. If there ain't no dough, then there ain't no show. So take your roly-poly fat promoter to the chemical bank and get my cash. If you want to see the people scream and laugh, the best question ask, real fast. Because I don't want to see them start bucking, throwing chairs in the air while you be ducking. What? Don't step to me with that. If you're promoting the show, make sure it ain't whack or else I'm leaving.
Let me tell you.
I'm leaving.
Let me tell you.
I'm leaving.
Let me tell you.
The whack show. Yo, man, what's up with you?